Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, it's blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Welcome to the Chase Down, part of the Almighty Baller Radio, part of Dash Radio. I'm Justin Rowan with a special guest co-host, as we had some technical difficulties. From Fear the Sword, we have Ryan Morton. Ryan, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Not too bad. I just realized I called you Ryan. I think that's like the first time I've ever called you Ryan instead of just Mort.
Maybe that caricature is starting to die. He's someone out on Twitter, but not necessarily a real person.
I'm going to say that it's the pressure of the recording, doing the show and all that. It just got to me, and that's why I went off the rails.
I figure it's got to be high pressure if Carter's already tapping out.
Oh, yes. Well, we know Carter doesn't have a lot of drive in him. It's very weak-willed man.
Folds quicker than Mo Williams in a playoff game.
Well, speaking of folding in a playoff game, the Cavs didn't do that, which was nice to see. They managed to sweep the Indiana Pacers in a series that really was too close for comfort at a lot of times. I believe they won the series by a total of 16 points combined, which is like historically low, but ultimately they still swept the series and they still get the benefit of rest after the series, which is nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, it was close, right? And a lot of people got mad at me because I forget what the specific tenor of the tweet was, but you know, it was just the Cavs sweep someone with mild effort. And I'm like, how could it be mild effort? It was only a 16-point sweep. I get it. It's kind of crappy on its face. But, I mean, how many quarters did they play where you're like, oh, man. Like, I'm not sure they really did anything in the first half of any of the games that constituted defensive effort.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't rebound well. They didn't defend well. And, you know, Carter had a great piece looking at their rebounding and how they're bad. And you say that rebounding is not all effort, and I agree. But these are all the same guys that were an elite rebounding team. So I think in their case, it is effort.
You know? Yeah, to an extent. But at the same time, as Carter highlighted, Richard Jefferson's, his rebound percentage has dropped off, which you might be able to attribute to, one, to effort, and two, him not playing as significant of a role with Kyle Korver coming into the lineup and the team going with lineups with Korver, JR, and other shooters. The other thing is the absence of Mozgov, who, at least when you look at the regular season numbers, would have had an impact on that.
Yeah, that's fair. I just, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely obviously some stuff you can be concerned about, but I just don't know how much they really put into, you know, we joke about flipping the switch all the time because they're so frustrating, but like the second half, that second half comeback when they're down 26, the right. Second half of game four, you know, like when they need to make plays, and sure, you're only playing the Pacers, but when they need to make plays, they make plays. Like their entire season has been doing just enough to get by,
right?
And that's what it feels like to me still.
Yeah, and if there was a switch, halftime might be that switch. I tweeted this out, but in the first half of their series against the Pacers, so the first half of each of the four games, their D rating was 123.2, which was tied for Houston as the worst. Which is...
Now that would probably be the worst in NBA history, like over an entire season.
Yeah,
I don't think... Probably over an entire
bad.
Playoffs.
So that's bad. In the second half, their D rating was 98.7, which was good. Like that's
very good, right?
That's very close to, well, not close to the Warriors' second half defense, who they had the best, but they were playing a pretty bunk Portland team. So Overall, though, I think there's positive takeaways that you can get from that. I do think that they did play with consistent effort, but this is just a team that hasn't had a lot of continuity. There's been so much roster turnover, both with new additions and injuries. They really haven't learned how to play together on both ends of the floor. And it's funny, their second half struggles or their fourth quarter struggles in this series were really more related to lack of offense than defense. Like, they just would go 5 minutes without hitting a shot, and everyone's like, oh, look at the Cavs' defense letting them back into the game. But really, it was the lack of offense, while the defense was fine, as the numbers would indicate.
Well, yeah, and that was the story all season, right? Like, and I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, so I'm going to be that guy. But
just going off the feel.
No, the data was out there, because I remember, and it was very late in the season. It might have been Windhorst that had it, or McMiniman, but their half court defense would rate as a top 10 or I think like top 7 defense, and they're last in the league in transition. And that's why DeAndre Liggins is no longer on the team. It's why he lost the starting spot, because offensively, as good as their set defense can be. Offensively, Chumper, when he was struggling, Liggins, Jordan McRae, was in there for a bit. Richard Jefferson, when he was slumping, like when those guys are bad, it's just they're always in transition. They're an old team that doesn't like to try hard. Like,
right.
It's not a recipe for success.
I was actually a little surprised. Sorry to cut you off, but I was actually a little surprised that they didn't try to put Derek Williams in, at least for some energy at some point, because I really did feel like that was lacking at times. I know he hasn't been great, but he hasn't necessarily been terrible either. I thought he might have been able to give them a little bit of something against the Pacers.
Well, that's weird, right? Like, historically, they have found and stuck with lineups that do great.
Right.
Like, they put Love at the five, it worked, they kept doing it. They put Fry at the five, it worked, they kept doing it. So they have that lineup with Derek Williams, what do you play, a three, maybe four, I'm not real sure. But you have LeBron, Williams, Korver, Jefferson, and Fry.
Yeah,
and just a huge lineup. And it was like plus 40. Like, it was had an absurd net rating. It went away because Korver got hurt and they signed Darren Williams. But I'm kind of shocked. Like, I don't think Derek Williams is great. But it is really weird to see him not go back to it, because they always go back to the well for that kind of thing. So I'm kind of shocked that Ty hasn't gone back there yet.
Mm-hmm. And plus, when you get a tone setter like him, it does have an impact on the rest of the team. Like, you would routinely see Derek Williams kind of break out in transition, and that forced everybody to play up tempo, which I think everyone can agree the Cavs don't play enough of a high tempo offense.
Right. Well, that was where they were last year. Remember, everyone killed Ty when they were like, oh, we need to get the Warrior, we need to raise the tempo. I was like, you're going to play a fast tempo game against the Warriors? You're an idiot.
Yeah, that's not
going to work. It's not even necessarily racing up and down the court, but pushing the defense to get into your set offense quicker.
Yeah, exactly.
Like forcing mismatches when you're at 20 seconds, not trying to get, recreate the 7 seconds or less Suns.
Yeah, exactly. It's about getting into the sets quicker, running the offense, because then you have that second or third look within your half-court offense, which really can help. It's funny, though. Like, I do think they had a more sustained effort than they had in the regular season. Like, I don't think they were just coasting in the first half. I've been of the opinion that it's going to take some time for the Cavs to figure things out. As I mentioned, they really didn't have a lot of continuity, and there's things that they need to figure out both on offense and defense. So I think it's a bit of a process. So Indiana really gave them exactly what they needed. Like, it was a tough series. They did have to really dig down and try at times, but at the end of the day, they still get the rest that gets provided once you sweep a team. And I think that's going to be really big for them, because now they can look at film and it won't just be, okay, I wasn't trying there. Okay, it was you trying and you made these mistakes. How can we work on that? And it gives them actual useful film to study. They get to practice. And with Kyrie dealing with his knee tendonitis, JR not at 100% health, this rest is really going to be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, every minute that Tristan's not playing is probably great.
You know, yeah, true. Like,
and I'm less concerned about Kyrie. I just think he had a tough stretch.
Yeah, he just didn't hit open shots.
Yeah, I mean, as you're probably getting towards, and if you haven't yet, I apologize in advance. You know, your knee doesn't need to be bothering you for it to feel terrible after you've had major surgery. Like, I get, you know, it's 70 degrees right now, it'll be 40 tomorrow, and every morning when I wake up with a big temperature change, I wish I would cut my leg off. So,
oh, yeah.
You know,
I'm
and
in
that's,
the same
that's,
boat.
Yeah, I mean, that's par for the course. And I don't think he's ever going to be away from that. So when I heard that, I wasn't really alarmed, because I think everybody that has a major issue like that feels that way. Yeah. Tristan is the one I'm most concerned about, because he's the only one that I think he's the X factor. You know, as great as LeBron is, as great as Kevin is, as great as Kyrie is, obviously LeBron, the best player in the universe, they don't have Tristan Thompson, and they're really up Schitt's Creek. Pardon my
French. Yeah, they're absolutely screwed. Like, they have no plan B when it comes to Tristan. I thought he looked good overall against Indiana. Like, when he was on the court, Miles Turner was basically ineffective. He was rebounding well. He got them so many extra possessions, even though he didn't play tons down the stretch in game four. The extra possessions that he got them while the offense was struggling really ended up making a difference in that final score, and that's just what Tristan Thompson brings. But I'm completely with you. I think once they go up against the Warriors, which in all likelihood they will, there doesn't really seem to be a legitimate competition in the West.
In the West. I thought you meant the East. Here's my thing with the Cavs is I feel like they are better than everybody, you know, in the East, but yeah, they can lose to anybody.
Oh, yeah, like, for sure.
They're so nonchalant about everything, and that's part of defending a title. I feel like they're going to get, like, maybe I don't feel like it, but there's, like, a 20% brain creep of, man, these guys are going to get embarrassed at some point. I really hope it's not Boston, because I hate Boston. But, it can't be Washington or Toronto either.
Yeah, like they fell asleep in the conference finals last year. And it's funny because even some of the Toronto reporters and Louis Scola, who was on the team, was like, yeah, the Cavs completely took their foot off the gas for about a game and a half. And some of us are buying into that, and others take it as a sign of disrespect. Like, the Cavs can just fall asleep.
Even Biombo had a 20-20, didn't he? I know he had a 25 rebound game, but didn't he have 20 points too? I mean, he was like a 15-25. Bismack Biyombo had some like incredible game that made him $70 million to sit behind Nick Vucevic.
Exactly. And it'll be funny to get your thoughts on this, because one, I know you're not a big fan of the Raptors, but then the alternative would mean that you'd have to praise the Celtics or Wizards. I'm just going to put you in that position. I think next round, whether it be Toronto, which looks likely, or if the Bucks upset them, I think next round is basically the conference finals. I think that's going to be the toughest series they have, because I don't buy into the Celtics being able to challenge them, and the Wizards can't play defense. And I guess there's some outside chance either the Hawks or Bulls make it. But I don't think those teams are a serious threat. So I really think the conference finals is this next round.
I mean, on paper, I wouldn't disagree. You know, the Raptors have the potential to be the most complete team. They have DeMar Carroll and P.J. Tucker. They have two power forwards now that can rebound and shoot. Ibaka can, you know, protect the rim. Every fifth game, you're going to get a really great offensive game from Jonas Valanciunas. maybe not so much against the Cavs. And I don't mean to put that on him, but like, he's so, at least for me, and I will admit to not watching a ton of Raptors games, but I just never watch him for the most part and go, ah, aha. You know, this is someone, his elite skill is getting the ball in the post, but I don't feel like he's very elite at it, and I could be wrong.
No, his post moves have regressed. Like, he came into the league probably with a more refined post game than he has now. They tried to add up a face-up game, and that's kind of taken away from it. Valanciunas is an interesting player because he does have offensive skills. He just doesn't put himself in a position to utilize them often. Like, he'll stand around calling for the ball without being open. He doesn't really find passing lanes and get into them, which off-ball skills really are an underrated aspect of a center's offense. Like, that's something Tristan Thompson does really well, whereas Valanciunas doesn't. And with him being so slow-footed and really his inability to play any sort of defense, he is a liability if he isn't being used, and I think a big part of why Toronto came back to win both games 4 and 5 there, their series against the Bucks, was because they benched Valanciunas in favor of Norman Powell and went with four wings. With Ibaka at center, it really helped things out, and they were able to prevent any penetration from Milwaukee. But Valanciunas, like you said, he's got talent, but he never really jumps off the screen. The only times he has big games is because Lowry and DeRozan are struggling to the point that they have to run everything through him.
Right. And that's where, like, man, there's such a grab bag. Like, I don't understand, you know, you never know what you're going to get from, at least in the playoffs, from Lowry and DeRozan.
Yeah, and, it's true.
Like, it's just crazy, like, P.J. Tucker is generally a good defender, but offensively, you never know what you're going to get from him.
Yeah.
Damari Carroll is...
a shell of himself this year, sadly.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's all over the place. Like, yeah, I have no idea what to make of the Raptors, but when they're on, they're great, and the Wizards don't have a bench. You know,
yeah, they don't have a bench, and they've been worse than the Cavs defensively since the All-Star break, which has kind of slid under the radar because everyone focuses on the Cavs defense and how that means that they're going to get dethroned. But
no one cares about the Wizards. Like, they're an interesting team because people like John Wall, but no one actually cares about the Wizards. I mean, people in Washington don't care about the Wizards. And
that's hard to debate.
I mean, they're fun, they're interesting, but yeah, I mean, your backup point guard is Brandon Jennings. He's pretty good, but he can't shoot. And your big wing acquisition is Bojan Bogdanović. He's pretty good, but he can't defend. In the playoffs, I looked it up. I'm pretty sure he's shooting 10%. That might be Lowry. Someone on their team is shooting 10% from three. I'm pretty sure it's Bogdanović.
Like, yeah, I'm not too sure about that.
I know he's shooting 30% from the field. He's either shooting 30 and 30 or 30 and 10. But basically, he's an offensive negative. He's useless on offense, and we know he can't defend.
Right.
So their bench right now is a tire fire. Like, yeah, I'm not super worried about the Wizards.
They have things that could give the Cavs trouble. Like, I think a John Wall, a Marcin Gortat pick and roll can produce some points at a decent rate. But I just don't think that they can win against the Cavs if this series becomes a shootout. Like, they don't have anyone to defend LeBron. Otto Porter Jr. is a nice defender, but he's wiry and not exactly what you would need to lock down LeBron. And I just think there's too many defensive net negatives on that team and too many weapons on the Cavs that over a 7-game series, there's just no chance that even if the Cavs weren't to step up their defensive effort, I don't see Washington being able to produce enough points to really match them.
Yeah, and that's where you see in the playoffs. In Boston, you know, the same thing. They're too small, but the difference between guys that can shoot and shooters are guys like you have in Washington with Bogdanović and Kelly Oubre and, you know, Jay Crowder in Boston and Avery Bradley. Like, they can shoot, but they're not shooters. You know,
right?
Like,
and they can't create their own shot.
Like, you'll give CJ Miles can shoot, but you'll give him a shot before a guy like Paul George, Jeff Teague.
Right.
Jeff Teague can shoot, but you'll give him shots. You know, whereas people are running, sprinting, trying to find Kyle Korver, trying to find Kyrie Irving, trying to find J.R. Smith. Like, the difference between volume shooters and guys that make some shots is something that you see play out big time in the playoffs. And, yeah, and none of these teams have shooters.
Yeah, and you really have to have a well-rounded game if you're going to go up against the Cavs, because the Cavs aren't afraid to abandon what they run to expose mismatches. And that's at both ends of the floor. Like, against the Pacers, they basically said, okay, Lance, you're going to have to make decisions. We're going to leave you wide open. We're going to funnel the ball to you. And we know you're going to hit some shots, and you're going to hit these wide open shots. But as the game progresses, that's going to go away, and you're going to have to start making decisions with the ball. And that's something that I anticipate next round. I think the Cavs are going to do that to PJ Tucker. They did it last year against the Raptors, where they trapped the ball. They forced it to get out of Lowry and DeRozan's hands, and they made other people make decisions. Now, I think
that's what
they've
done with Draymond Green for 2 years. Right. You know, it's, you know, we'll live and die with, we'll give Draymond the ball and all the space in the world to shoot, and he's going to want to pass. We're not going to give him anyone to pass it to, and right. He's basically sitting behind the three-point line thinking on what he's got to do, and, you know, yeah, one time it worked, one time it didn't.
Yeah.
Well, it did, but they just didn't have the people.
Right. Yeah, and they had done that last year against Toronto with Serge Ibaka, or not Serge Ibaka, but Bismack Biyombo. Like, that was their outlet, and I think Toronto's better suited to combat that. Like, I think they have smarter players. I think Tucker will make better decisions than Terrence Ross did, and Ibaka.
Oh, yeah.
Ibaka's undoubtedly better with the ball than Bismack Biyombo is, but still, like, the issues are there when you don't have enough guys that can create their own shot and create their own offense. That if you can effectively take the ball out of Lowry and DeRozan's hands, the Raptors are going to struggle. And while I think they're going to test the Cavs, and I hope that the Cavs come prepared, like, I think this time off could really benefit them, and we might see them buzzsaw through the Raptors like they did against the Hawks last year. This is a team that could catch them. If they aren't prepared, and I don't mean upset them, but at least make this a long series.
Yeah, I don't think they can. I mean, they might. I would be more surprised. Man, it's so weird. I don't expect them to buzzsaw anybody. That just hasn't been their thing. And, you know, when they're shooting, they'll destroy people, and then they're content to curl up in a shell and hope that they don't come all the way back.
Right.
But, you know, the lineups.
We've given enough effort at this point. We can rest.
Yeah, which is sometimes infuriating. You know, I'm reticent to share that because I always admonish people for it. But it can be frustrating.
Oh, for sure.
But it's, you know, the lineups that no one can defend are not lineups that are going to defend more often than not. They'll defend enough. I mean, you can have Kyle Korver defend enough, Channing Frye defend enough, but you'll get a 25-point lead and end with a, you know, an 8-point lead. So, not, you know, they'll get you a lead and then give half of it back. That's not who they are. Whereas last year, you know, you're getting good minutes from Shumpert, you're getting good minutes from Jefferson, you're getting good minutes from better defenders.
Yeah, and it's funny because people do love to look at those lineups and they'll go, oh, look, these bench players are better than the starters. And it's really funny. With the more stats that are available, I feel like people are having a tougher and tougher time analyzing what's in front of them. Because, yes, those lineups are great, but really they are able to do what they do because Kyrie and Love will go up against the other team's starters. They'll play even basketball there, and then LeBron comes in with the bench lineup and just absolutely blitzes the other team's bench. And blitz is the right word. Like, it's like football, where you throw different looks at a team, and that keeps them off kind of keeps them on their toes. If you did that for a full game, it wouldn't be as effective. But yet, people still want to get their takes off.
The takes, man. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I you know, the further down we go, the more wrapped up I get in, man, this information is so useful. Everyone has just enough of a knowledge of it to be an annoying dick, but not enough to explain why they actually care that much. Like rest. Rest is the perfect example. We all know rest is good, right?
Yeah, I think rest is nice.
we had a I went to Sloan a few years ago, and people have been, Doc Rivers was like the first coach to really invest in sleep technology when he was with the 2008 Celtics.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a symposium on that and how you're, you know, if you only get 3 hours of sleep, it's like you've had six beers, some stuff like that. Like, sleep data is there. The technology is there. We all know rest is important and valuable. Greg Popovich talks about it. And we get a whiff of these trends, and now, like, we're overboard. Like, I'm reading, LeBron's playing 37.8 minutes. Eventually, at some point, potentially, he might break down. Well, thanks, True Hoop. Like, he's 33. Of course. Yes, eventually, at some point, maybe he might break down. I might break down, too. I'm also old.
I might pull a muscle while recording this. Like, there's a 50-50 chance.
Efficiency. Everything must be only efficient, which in generally is a pretty good concept. Yes. And then we take it way too far. Playable. Remember when playable was like the big word for like 5 minutes? Is he playable? Is that guy playable? Could you play him?
Everyone's Is Kyrie Irving playable?
Is Kevin Love playable against the Warriors? Like, we get a whiff of these concepts, and we don't fully understand. Does anybody honestly completely 100% understand? Like, I have a pretty good grasp on RPM, but they won't tell you specifically.
Well, what no, it is. You unless can't.
They have, unless they have somewhere, and I look like a giant jackass.
No, trust. They haven't released the formula for that. So, and that's like, I've ranted about this a million times. So, I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record, but I don't understand how people can slavishly devote themselves to the stat and say it's the perfect metric when you don't know what goes into it. Like, people have a rough idea, but yeah, it's based off plus minus, which everyone has accepted is basically one of the worst metrics that you can possibly look at. And I know there's a bunch of other things that go into it, player's height, what moon it is or whatever, but like, how can you honestly, like, slavishly devote yourself to something and say it's perfect when we, one, don't know what goes into it, and two, most smart people will tell you that we maybe have like 20-30% of defense captured in statistics. So to put 50-50% weighting on both categories, which for centers, defense is probably more than 50% of their impact. Like, it's very important for centers. For a point guard, defense might only be worth like 20% of their impact, because that's just a position where it doesn't impact team defense as much, and it's tougher to play. Like, really, there's probably only about 5 or 6 point guards that are truly good defenders, and none of them can defend the elite point guards in the league.
Yeah, it's just like, I like all this stuff. Like,
I do too.
It's a good guidestone. Rest is great. I think rest is very important. I would love LeBron to rest more. But, oh man, who was it? I forget who it was. Someone that loves the Celtics, of course. when they won that overtime game at the end of the year, and it's like, oh, look at this. Ty Lue was playing LeBron 52 minutes in April. Greg Popovich says rest is important. Who would you rather have? Well, clearly everyone would rather have Greg Popovich, bro, but like, are the players supposed to rest, or are they supposed to play? Like, you know, if he sits a game out, he's destroying the childhoods of a million babies. And if he plays, 17 minutes in April, gosh. Jeez. Hope this guy likes working at Burger King.
Like, the Tyronn Lue hate is too much.
We've gone overboard with everything.
Yeah, we really have, and I think part of it is people want to show that they are enlightened and that they consume all the stats and stuff. And I mean, I love poring over the stats, but people will try to carve whatever narrative they want out of this. They disregard sample sizes and they use it just too frequently, and I think part of that is to show that, oh, look, I'm an enlightened fan, I care about the stats, when really the stats should either validate something that you've noticed watching the game or should give you something to look into. Like, the fact that the Spurs defense is better statistically when Kawhi Leonard is off the floor doesn't mean Kawhi Leonard is a bad defender. And you have to look at trends in the game to see that. And, like, in this nauseating MVP conversation, I've seen people bring that up. They're like, well, Kawhi Leonard doesn't actually help the Spurs defense. And, like, I'm sitting there vomiting blood being like, how can you honestly say that? Like, we... It just goes too far. I think you're completely right.
Well, I mean, we all know Russ is the MVP, right?
Yeah. Don't trigger me like that, man.
I mean, I know where your roots are, you know, out in the Bay. But we all know that. I mean, come on, he broke Oscar Robinson's record. That's amazing.
That's fantastic. That really is great. I'm happy for him. But Oscar didn't win the MVP that year. Russ is on a six.
He's incredible in the best NBA there has ever been. The league has never had more talent.
But he contests like two to three shots a game. He contests like 2 to 3 shots a game because he's camping for rebounds.
People need to appreciate the outliers more, man.
No, we can appreciate it. Maybe
LeBron plays a ton of minutes. I don't know what the bad minutes are. He played 90 more minutes this year than he did last year. What are the bad minutes? When do the bad minutes come? Is 3,000 the bad minutes? He was under 3,000. But, you know, like, is minute 47,231 in his career the one where he's going to fall apart? I have no idea because I'm not a scientist and I'm not LeBron. Like,
wasn't there some crazy story before the year that they did like a test on LeBron prior to the season and like the scar tissue he has on his body is the same as someone would have at 19 years old?
Something like that. Dude's a freak. Like, remember last year and they're showing it again this year? He sleeps in that friggin' hyperbaric chamber like at all times. During the playoffs when he's not in a game or like doing something.
Like, he's not a normal dude.
And that's kind of the other, and I hate to harp on the rest thing. I read this article right before the podcast, if you can't tell, so I'm just annoyed and frustrated. But like, he clearly cares about himself and his body and his legacy and his ability to continue making money more than anything else. As he should. No one's going to look out for you except for you, man. LeBron should be – of course he should think more of himself than he thinks of the Cavaliers. Every player should think that way. So, I mean, he has, you know, his own personal training staff. Like, if there was a red flag there, the Cavs heavily invest in medical data. They work with the Cleveland Clinic. Like, I just feel like if there's a red flag there to be had, they would find it, and he would sit out whenever he – damn well pleases, because he doesn't care about seating or anything else.
Exactly.
I just wish I was a scientist. Like, I wish I was a little bit smarter. I know I'm a genius, but if I was like 20% more of a genius and I could understand sleep science and put my little Twitter calculator out and be like, look, see, guys, the good minutes are here. These are the good minutes. They're the okay minutes. Like, I feel like I'd feel better.
That would be great if you were the one that would do that. I don't have the energy or the desire to put that work into to become a sleep scientist or analyze this kind of stuff.
It's gonna be so awkward when they cancel your podcast because you had me on. Who is this idiot?
No. Your
judgment of character is terrible.
Honestly, it's typically Carter and I. Like, it's. There's a low bar for you to clear.
Ah, Carter.
who knows if he'll listen to this, but changing gears here. What was something that you found concerning from the Pacers series? Because obviously it's not all positive, but if there was one takeaway that you thought, okay, I didn't like how this went, or something that they need to improve on, what would that be?
Free throws, I think.
Oh, God, you know, that was terrible.
None of the positives or negatives were consistent, right? Like, other than LeBron being amazing, of course. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they hit free throws, mostly they did not. A lot of times they did not defend. I mean, that has to be a concern. They haven't defended well at all this year. They haven't rebounded very well. But sometimes they did, you know. Kyrie had two terrible games. He had two good games. Kevin Love was absolutely awful in game four. He's a primary reason they won game three. Like, yeah, I think that was game three. That might have been game two. Whatever, he was killing Lance. All of the negatives, they kind of all mix up. I don't think anyone was outright negative the entire time.
I'd agree.
You got good minutes from Shump. You got good minutes from Darren Williams. You got good – well, actually, there's go. I think there's a concern. They weren't getting Korver shots. They could not manufacture shots for Kyle Korver.
Yeah, Indiana did a really good job on both Korver and JR, I thought, off ball. Like, they were really daring LeBron and Kyrie to beat them. And Kyrie missed a ton of open shots all series. I think he was, like, 1 of 19 on open threes, which is uncharacteristic. And the once he returns to the mean, if he does that against Toronto, it's going to be ugly for Toronto. But, Indiana really dared kind of the stars to beat up on them, which LeBron was happy to do. They really didn't get Korver or JR shots. And it's kind of remarkable that when you consider the lack of production they got from those two, plus Kyrie and Love struggling with their shot, the fact that they got a sweep in that series with this terrible defense that will never win anything is kind of remarkable.
Yeah, and that's, you know, kind of what, you know, the nuance of basketball is great, because a concern is that they did not get shots for Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith. A positive thought that I had is, wow, the Pacers were so obsessed with them not getting shots for Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith that everyone else was open all the time. Like, you know, so maybe it's good that they're not getting shots for Kyle Korver, because that means someone's running around after Kyle Korver and LeBron is at the rim. There's no making sense of this team. Like, if I tell you today that they're terrible rebounding, it'll probably be amazing for the entire next series, because that's what they do. They're so stupid and unpredictable. That's why they're fun. Like, the Warriors are going to dominate everybody. We know that. It's predictable. Yeah. You know, unless someone gets hurt, there's no intrigue or, you know, thing to be had with the Warriors. They've got four top 20 players. The Cavs are your melancholy screw up little brother that just wants to show up and get paid and kind of be good sometimes. They're always something different, and that's, you know, that makes them enjoyable for me in this downtrodden year of only being the 2 seed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. It's why they're frustrating. It's why they're captivating. Like, they are an interesting team because of their faults, and it's part of why I love them. And it's nice that they are an underdog, because that does take pressure off. Like, when you combine having the championship last season, which, I mean, the anxiety of, is LeBron going to get a ring in Cleveland, would be a lot this year if they hadn't got that. They probably would have had a much better regular season if that was the case, but when you combine being the underdog and having the ring last season, it really does take a lot of pressure off of this year. Like, to some extent, it does feel like gravy. I do think that they still have a decent shot. If they didn't win. What's that?
If they didn't win last year, I don't know how we would make it. You know, and it seems like so long ago, but I'm sure you recall how doomy all the emails were.
Oh, like, man,
it
was
settling
awful.
In for year three, and they added Kevin freaking Durant, and they were already 2-0. Like, man.
There was a lot of rationalizing. You know what? It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to have Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley and the Brooklyn pick. We'd have some youth.
I'm just trying to prepare myself for this trade. I mean, love for Griffin. Griffin's at least under contract, and he's pretty athletic. And I like Blake Griffin, but I don't think I'd trade Kevin Love for him.
No, you know, I wouldn't.
He shoots, but he's not like a willing shooter. So, you know. But,
and he's more ball dominant, too, which isn't going to work next to Kyrie and LeBron.
Like, man, we would be freaking out. I would hate basketball so much more, and poor Kyrie and Kevin would be exiled to the land of frost, like he'd be in Narnia chasing goat people because no one would allow them near LeBron ever again because they were 0-2 in the finals and had another. I mean, would they even be here? Because if they were 0-2 in the finals and they had the start to the season that they had, where they're just like, well, they were good up until the trade deadline, I guess, and they were whack after. So I guess they'd be here. But
yeah, Love would have been gone in the summer, and I, as much as I hate it because I really like Kevin Love, I do think there is a possibility that he would get moved this summer. But that's a topic for another day. But
they know, they can't do that. Well, I mean, maybe that isn't. Well, it probably is. I guess it's your show. But like, I feel like they should never break those three up. Like, you got to go Spurs, and maybe the three of them win you one title. But those are your three title winning stars. You have to ride them until they die.
I'd be cool with that. At the same time, if a Jimmy Butler or Paul George is available and there's some sort of package around like Love, Shump, and Osman, then that's the type of deal. Like I don't want him traded.
Why would you make that trade? Like, why would you? If you're trading Jimmy Butler, wouldn't you do it to be terrible and not to get Kevin Love and
Indiana might. Indiana might, if they feel Paul George is going, and Larry Bird would love a white superstar in Indiana.
Oh, man. I'm not touching that. I could see Larry Bird doing that, though. Larry Bird, well, you know what?
He's done some quirky things.
The Bulls lose every trade they don't make with the Knicks. I didn't think about that either.
It's true.
Like, man.
Shout out to Luol Deng for Andrew Bynum.
Shumpert is back. I mean, maybe he built that trade against. You saw him. You have to feel good about that, right?
Like, I like genuinely seeing Shumpert.
Great minutes from Shump. And I'm only the Shump fan because everyone is down on him, and that's what I have to do. Right. Like, if everyone universally hates somebody, I must be their fan so they can hate me too, or my brand won't work right.
Right. You got to stay on brand.
But, I mean, Shump was good. Like, he was legitimately good.
It was really nice to see him respond to being benched for like the first three halves of the series with inspired play. The only thing I'll add is I was a little concerned to see him take some Shump shots in game four, like down the stretch. Like, I think he was feeling himself a little bit in the second half, and maybe that's something to keep an eye on. But yeah, he played great defense on Paul George. He really gave them quality minutes, which was nice to see, because truthfully, this season while his offense has been better this year as a whole, as well as his playmaking, his defense, he hasn't played really any defense all year. So to see that finally come in the playoffs has been really encouraging to see.
I thought he was good at the beginning. I think Amon Shumpert is like a great bellwether for the Cavs altogether. Like, he was so good right up until January. Like, he was he was much better than JR all year.
Yeah,
up until JR got hurt. And then, just like the Cavs, all of a sudden he was just awful. And, like, you didn't ever want to see him on the court. Like, I'm like, oh, Shump's here. This is amazing. In the back of my mind, I'm like, man, I know you're trying hard and I love you, man, but.
God damn, you're killing us.
But, like, I want DeAndre Liggins on the floor right now. Why do I feel this way? This is all very unnatural. Jordan McRae, get out there. Man,
Jordan McRae was on this team. Wow.
So, that might be the biggest positive for me, I think. Like, if we had to rank positives, I think getting good Shump. It's either getting good Shump or getting good Deron Williams. But
see, to me, I think it's Deron Williams. Like, there were a few positives that I'd take from the Pacer series. Like, one, Tristan looking good was very nice to see. Getting good Shump was great. But getting Deron Williams looking engaged, like, I really think that game against Miami did wonders for him. Like, he's finally finding a rhythm with this team, and I think Tyronn Lue's using him better too. Like, fewer minutes with Deron, Kyrie, and LeBron is good for him, because this way he actually gets to handle the ball. Like, he needs the ball in his hands to be effective. He needs to be running the pick and roll. He needs to be initiating the offense if he's going to play well. He's not good as the third ball handler in some lineups.
I hate him and Kyrie playing together. I really do.
It's useless.
You know, like Kyrie and Dele worked, and you know, you could play Dele with Kyrie, you could play Dele with LeBron. Dele couldn't dribble the ball, so he was handling the ball anyway. Like his role was the same, no matter who he was on the court with.
He'd come up the half court and start posting up his man.
Oh my god! I want him to play the Raptors next round. A, because I'm terrified of Giannis, like mortally terrified. Oh yeah,
I'm on board with you there. Giannis and Middleton is something LeBron. I don't want any part
like
of.
It'll be like a Highlander thing, right? Like the Cavs will play the Bucks, and Giannis will just in LeBron and steal his power right there and become the one true, you know, he's like the proto-Bron. It's like, hey, what if we had LeBron?
At some point, the Bucks are going to beat the Cavs and go to the finals, and that's coming at some point. I don't think it could happen this year, but I want to avoid them for as long as humanly possible.
Like, I don't want any part of Giannis, but I also don't want to watch the nicest man on the planet, Matthew Dellavedova, touch a basketball. He's so nice. Wonderful guy. Please do not touch a basketball in my presence.
I also don't want him dive-bombing Kyrie's knee.
Yeah, stay away from Kyrie Irving's knees. Kind of feel the same way about P.J. Tucker. Kind of wish, you know, he wasn't going to be near LeBron so much.
But yeah, I don't know how. Does P.J. Tucker have a history of dirty plays? Like, I know he's a really physical player.
He's like, he's the size of a house and he's physical. Like, yeah. He's not doing anything bad. And I don't think Dele's necessarily dirty. He just doesn't care.
Reckless.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah. So you get big guys. Dele's a pretty big guy. He's built. He's 6'4 point guard, you know, and he's reckless. And P.J. Tucker's built like a house, and he's reckless because he has to play with an edge or he's useless.
Right, you know, exactly.
When you're undersized, you have to be that way. Or when you're slower, you have to be that way. And that's a perfectly valid way to play. Just do it against somebody else. Not against superstars, please.
That's what I liked against about playing against the Hawks. Like, unless Kent Bazemore is pushing you, like, that's the only real threat. Like, otherwise, they're just not physical. You just, oh, here's your path to the lane. If we collapse, just kick out for an open three and repeat. Like, it's such a path of least resistance against the Hawks. It's just a beautiful, beautiful brand of basketball that they let the Cavs play.
Same thing with the Pacers. Like, the Pacers are very good, but, you know, Miles Turner is a few years away from being someone that's really physical.
Indiana just has low basketball IQ, I feel. Like, they have a lot of dudes. Like, I'd take Paul George and Jeff Teague as my 1-2 punch over Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford. And, like,
that might make some sense. Yeah, I'm not like big on either. I mean, you know, I'm a notorious Al Horford hater on the internet.
Right.
But,
like, I feel like the gap between Isaiah Thomas and Teague is smaller than Horford to Paul George.
That might be fair. I just feel like the playoffs is how many bigger people do you have that can do multiple things. So Isaiah Thomas is already disadvantaged. He's 5'9". I just don't like him in the playoffs, and he's having a good series.
Yeah, he's having
any player under 6'2", like ever.
Yeah,
Chris Paul. Love Chris Paul. He's amazing, but I mean, there's levels and levels and levels to why he keeps losing, because it's certainly not all his fault, or even probably even most of his fault. But you can only impact the game so much when you're under 6'5".
Yeah,
there's only so much you can do.
Yep, and the same goes for Kyle Lowry. Although I guess that's a whole other bag of worms.
Right, and that's circling all the way back is why it's nice to have Darren Williams playing good basketball, because he is tall. Ish. What is he? 6'3",
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big point guard.
You have more bigger guards doing things which you need to do, because all the other guards. Yeah, it's important that he plays well, because all these other guards are tiny. You need. I sound like a crazy person now.
But. Yeah, you do, but you're right. Like, with Isaiah Thomas, they're like, okay, yeah, Isaiah Thomas can't defend anybody, but we have Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart who are going to check in, and they're going to lock up your point guard. That's great, but now Isaiah Thomas is switched onto a shooting guard, and you got this little 5'7", 5'9", point guard on, like, 6'6", J.R. Smith. Like,
well, even Steph Curry. Like, that's how they, you know, it's, hey, Steph Curry's going to guard JR, but the whole point is he's going to help off JR, and now he can't close out to his shot fast enough.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you know, and Mo Williams is the perfect example. Like, I can't tell you, and I mean, I don't probably don't even need to tell you, like, watching Mo Williams try to guard Ray Allen was nightmare fuel. Like, oh, he clearly can't guard Rajon Rondo, so we have to have Anthony Parker do it. What's he going to do now? Oh, close out on Ray Allen. Ugh. It's going to go great. It went awful all the time.
This is, you really don't have to bring up those days. Like, that still stings, man.
It is so bad, right?
It really does hurt.
Didn't I drop like 60 points on you with Anthony Parker in 2K? Was that you or was that someone else?
No. Not Anthony Parker. Anthony Parker I would accept because Anthony Parker was a fantastic player. You dropped like 52 points on me in 2K with Sasha Pavlovich, and the crowd was chanting MVP. I think you also dropped like 30 on me with Todd McCullough.
Todd McCullough?
Which hurt a lot. That really stung. Using the hometown hero.
Yeah, man, Sasha might be one of the most disrespectful things. That's worse than LeBron saying he wishes he was at Coachella instead of playing the Pacers.
That was absolutely outstanding.
Paul George needs to go to Larry Bird's office and be like, look at this, man. LeBron.
The man said he wanted to be at Coachella.
He didn't even care about us. He's just trying to be. And that's kind of where I come out on. Well, you know, it was such a tough series. Man, I mean, it was a close series, but LeBron's sitting there talking about wanting to be at Coachella.
Yeah. It was a close series with LeBron wanting to be at Coachella, Kyrie and Love not being able to hit a shot, and as a result, Indiana was able to key in on J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver. Because, like, if Kyrie or Love, or both, which happens frequently, is going off, you can't stay on those guys. And they are going to absolutely torch you if you let them open.
Yeah, I wish they'd look normal again. That'd be a great thing. Maybe them not playing super great is bumming me out more than I thought. Maybe that's my concern. Where are Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love?
They're more fun that way. Like, the teams that it's most fun when Kyrie's going off. Like, and maybe part of it's, like, just the standard that LeBron has set for himself. Like, it's absolutely amazing to see LeBron go off. But when they are the most fun to watch, it's Kyrie lighting it up, and LeBron's typically right there with them. But it just kicks this team into a whole other gear.
Did you have, like, a super homeless man's Game 7 vibe about that Game 4? And what I mean is, like, you had, now it was LeBron with the big shot, but you had Kyrie Irving with the steal.
And then Kevin Love locked up Paul George in the post.
And then the Kevin Love defense, you know, on Indiana's penultimate possession. Other, of course, than the possession they got when J.R. Smith did what J.R. Smith does and why we all love him so much.
Just that was one of the all-time best J.R. Smith possessions. And it's amazing. Like, I'm sure you read the Dion Waiters thing in the Players Tribune. Like, it would,
my son, my child.
It would bum me out to lose out on Dion Waiters and that personality if J.R. Smith wasn't coming in return. Like, J.R. Smith makes it okay. Like, not only is it a smart basketball move, but you get the J.R. Smith experience, which is just phenomenal.
I wanted them to lose when he did that, just so I could read the J and get, you know, the post-game interview. Remember when he was shaking hands instead of playing defense? I think that might have been against the Pacers.
It was against the Bucks. He was dapping up Jason Terry, who was on the bench.
Jason Terry. I was thinking he was dapping up Monte Ellis, but either way.
Same thing.
He's dapping up someone instead of playing defense. His man scores, and then he gives his post-game interview in a ski mask.
I had completely forgot about the ski mask element to this.
Yeah, he had his jacket, like, zipper, or his jacket strings just, like, tugged as tight as they could go in a ski mask.
And he had to, like, apologize the next game.
Yeah, and then he apologized for doing it. But, like, I wanted the Pacers to win. Because it was his alter ego. I was like, oh, my God, please let Paul George hit this shot. Cavs lose. It's 3-1. Everyone walks around JR. If JR came out in
a ski mask, that would have made my life complete.
Yeah. He's dressed up like Inspector Gadget. He's got, like, a tin can hat and some scissors, like, taped to the side of his face.
Oh, man. Yes, the JR experience is just, it's the greatest. Before we wrap this up, let's get a quick prediction. I'm going to assume that you think the Raptors are going to beat the Bucks now up 3-2 in the series.
We'll assume that all leading teams are going to win, which I guess is only one, because everyone else is 2-2. So.
Yeah, that's true. But it really seems like Toronto had kind of solved the Bucks' defense. Benching Jonas helps. But what do you expect next round with the Cavs and Bucks?
Cavs and Raptors?
Yeah, whatever.
Well, yeah, so first off, I expect the Raptors, not the Bucks.
Okay.
Man, I have no idea. I expect the Cavs to win.
Because, yeah, that's fair. It could be in four, it could be in six.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of the sweet spot. Like, I'll probably pick Cavs in five, but it's more likely that it'll either be over in four or six, if that makes sense.
I'm thinking Cavs in five. But, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it goes seven, because Toronto can score. When they click, they can score on anybody.
And they actually have defensive versatility. Like, they can do some stuff.
Yeah, Serge Ibaka, hypothetically, you know, can be someone that guards Kevin Love and LeBron on switches. Patrick Patterson has had some success.
Yeah, he can guard on
Kevin
switches,
Love
too.
And LeBron on switches. I'm not worried about anybody defending Kyrie in a series. I don't think there's a person that can quote-unquote defend Kyrie in his offensive game. Doesn't have a weakness, but he has to make shots, and currently he's not doing that. So, yeah. But have
hopefully
you ever
the time
seen
off
Kyrie
helps.
Get played? Have you ever seen him get outplayed in a series, like one time? And I'm not trying to be a homer, because the series where he most likely would have gotten outplayed, he got hurt in game one, so we don't have to think about that.
Exactly. The series against the Pacers was honestly the closest he's come to being outplayed. He right. wasn't, but that was probably the closest. Like, that's probably his worst playoff series right there, which says a lot, because it was pretty decent.
Right. I mean, when he's bad, he's good, in some aspects. There are other aspects, such as his passing, that can leave a little more to be desired, but he's not as bad as people tell you he is.
True.
But... like, I don't worry about Kyle Lowry against Kyrie, because I don't worry about Kyrie against anybody. He raises to where he needs to be, depending on who he's playing.
Yeah.
But the Raptors definitely have pieces. Like,
they have
if
dudes.
LeBron, maybe that'll be our bellwether. If LeBron's hitting threes, Cavs in five. If he's shooting 25% to 30%, I'll say Cavs in seven.
Wow.
Okay.
If he
doesn't have to get into PJ Tucker, because I mean, if he's hitting threes, he's not guardable.
No, so he really isn't.
If he doesn't have to get into PJ Tucker's body, if he doesn't have to get into Patrick Patterson's body, like I don't see how the Raptors can win more than two games.
Yeah, that's fair.
If LeBron is hitting shots, does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. He shot
45% on seven attempts against the Pacers. That's not fair. That's crazy.
He really is not fair, and that's ultimately the trump card. But that's
like
probably a good
place. If LeBron is a 45% three-point shooter, everybody but the Warriors and maybe the Spurs should go home. Like, go
home.
That's
true. That's true.
Go. Leave.
And we will also go home at this point. Thanks again for filling in, Ryan. We appreciate it. To all our listeners, a reminder that you can listen to us on Dash Radio every Wednesday morning at 8, as well as download the podcast on iTunes. Subscribe there. Leave reviews. It helps people reach us. So thanks for listening, and as always, go Cavs.